I'm Zach.
And I'm Josh.
And this is Lamp Stomp, a Pixar podcast.
Zach, we're back!
We are back.
How are you doing?
Well, I currently have COVID, but I'm not going to try to talk about that too much beyond this point right here. But I'm excited to talk about Onward.
Moving onward.
Right.
Sorry to hear that, man.
Yeah.
Get better, good, isolate quick, and hopefully move on quickly.
For sure.
Zach, I got a question for you.
Let's hear it.
Are you a big board game guy?
So
you and Carly like a big board game family?
We didn't necessarily talk about how you were going to open this, but I had a sneaky suspicion that's how you were going to open this. And I will answer your question by saying I would play the mess out of Quest of Yore. that looks like so much fun. I love to dabble in board games. Actually, Carly got me this board game for Christmas, and so we played it the other day. It was pretty fun. Funny enough, I view myself as pretty good at board games, but almost every time we play one, Carly beats me, and it's usually me showing her how to play, but she ends up beating me anyway.
That's funny.
So we're a big board game family. We enjoy that. We don't get to play as much as we want. Obviously life gets busy, but I love to sit down and play a good board game. How about you?
Not a ton. I would have said up until a week or two ago, I probably would have said more or less. We like the games we get together with extended family. We'll play some sort of game. We have some fun with it. But over Christmas, over the Christmas break time, I got together with a buddy of mine who I haven't seen in a while. And I kind of had that conversation with him about board games. And I didn't realize how into board games people can get.
Yeah.
Because Hunter and I really like Settlers of Catan, which feels like it's like a strategy game. It's kind of complicated and not a lot of people play it. And I mentioned that to him and he's like, oh, what a rookie game. And I'm like, what?
Yeah, yeah.
So it gets deep. He recommended 20 different games for us. I was like, that's wild. So I like board games a lot. I'm not as into them as you can get, but I would play virtually anything somebody put in front of me.
So did you know that there is actually a Quest of Yore board game?
Really? Does it have working spells?
I'm not right. I'm not sure how it works or what you do, but it looks like
they made one.
I'm on this thing. It looks like you can buy it. So I might have to look into that.
Is it based on the movie?
I mean, yeah, it's literally called Barley's Edition.
That's cool.
So I might have to check that out sometime. All right, Josh, why don't we go ahead and go into our Remember Me section. Josh, we open up on this mythical looking amazing landscape, and we are narrated by this guy that says that in this world there used to be magic and everything was awesome and everyone used magic to help each other and do these amazing things. But unfortunately, technology started to advance, and over the centuries, magic became kind of not as used as much, and it was mainly put to the side. No one really used it. And so we zoom in on this modern day fantasy land where there's things like unicorns eating out of trash cans. There's centaurs being police officers. There's elves that live in suburbia. It is this really, really interesting landscape that they have given for us. Our story revolves around this elvish family, and our main protagonist is Ian Lightfoot. He is an elf. He struggles with self-confidence. He's not very confident in himself. He lives with his mom and his older brother, Barley. And so we open the day with it being Ian's 16th birthday. And so they keep talking about how they want this birthday to be special for Ian, and how there's going to have like a party with cake and all of these things tonight. And so we see that Ian has found this sweatshirt that used to be his dad, where he used to go to college. And so basically they do all this. We see that Barley is kind of a lazy, not really into much work. He's not really kind of figured out his life, but he loves playing this board game called Quest of Yore. And it is this fantasy land that basically describes a whole lot of the stuff that was happening at the beginning of the movie, magic and spells and all that kind of stuff. And so Ian goes to school, but on his way, he goes to this restaurant where he was going to pick up breakfast. And this guy notices that he has the sweatshirt on, and he's like, wait, are you, I can't remember the dad's name, but are you, I think it's like Wilden Lightfoot, I think is his name. Let me look real quick.
That's correct. That's it. It's Wilden.
And so are you Wilden Lightfoot's son? And so he talks with this stranger that went to college with his dad, and he tells him stories about his purple, his weird purple socks and all these things. And Ian just gets this really rush of just like goodness, because he's finally learning some stuff about his dad, which is really cool. And so he goes to school, and he knows that he wants to invite some friends to his party later. And he finally gets up the nerve after school to go up and talk to these I think there's four of them people. And he's like, okay, party. And he kind of fumbles through his words and not really well, but he finally gets the invite out, and who comes down the road but Barley in his amazing van called Guinevere that has like a unicorn on the side, which is really funny. And so he gets embarrassed, and he basically is like, oh, I can't do it. And so he gets home, and they're having cake, and or they're getting ready to have cake, and you can just tell that Ian's kind of down. And so the mom's like, okay, I was gonna wait until we had the cake to show you this. And she goes upstairs, and she brings down this like wooden magic spell cane. I don't really know what you call it. And so she says, basically, your dad wanted you to have this whenever both of you were at least 16 years old. And so they open it up and they read it, and they see that the dad has basically left them a magic cane with a spell that can bring him back for one day. And so he starts to cast that spell, Barley does, and he tries for hours and hours and hours and hours, and nothing happens. And so they're like, well, we just give up. But later, Ian was just kind of messing around reading the sign, and he tries to do it. And as soon as he starts talking, the whole room starts to swirl, and you can tell that this is actually working, and it's happening, it's happening, it's happening. You can see that the feet start coming, and it goes up to the legs, and you can see there's purple socks, which is what they mentioned earlier. And like, their dad is literally coming to life right in front of them in their room. But something happens, and the Phoenix Gem, I forgot to mention that, which is how you make the spell happen, started to disappear and go away. And there was this big explosion, and they were like, okay, what happened, dad, are you okay? And so they go, and they start to pull him out of the closet where he had landed, and they realize that the dad is only a pair of pants, and they have not actually resurrected him, but they have only resurrected the bottom portion of him, and that is very unfortunate. And so Barley basically says, we have to go, and we have to find a Phoenix Gem. We have to go to the Manticore's tavern and find the map. She'll show us where to go to get another Phoenix Gem so that we can get our dad back, the rest of them. And so they go towards that, and they go towards the Manticore's tavern. And it looks like this place where there's just going to be some roughnecks, some like hoodlums and all that kind of stuff. But they go in, and it's actually just turned into a restaurant. Well, it used to be this place where all of these adventurers could come and kind of like go out from there. Has turned into a restaurant, and the Manticore, of whom was this mighty, mighty warrior, is now just like a like a waitress, and so at this restaurant. And so they talk to the Manticore, and she's basically telling them, I don't send people on quests anymore. That's not really me anymore. And Ian actually steps up and is like, no, you're going to send us on this quest. You're going to do this. But she continues to refuse, and she continues to not send them on the quest. But they actually snuck out with a kids menu that has the map on it. And so they were able to get that anyway. But I forgot to mention that on the way to the Manticore's Tavern, Barley was trying to get Ian to practice more magic because he thought that Ian had some magic. And so he was practicing this spell called Aloft Olivar, where it lifts things up basically. And so he does it on the way there. He tries and he tries and tries, but he just can't get it. But when these beams, after the whole Manticore's Tavern was starting to catch on fire, was about to fall on the dad, he actually uses the spell and he does it perfectly. And so they get out of the Manticore's Tavern and they start going towards something called the Raven's Point. And they start arguing about whether they should go the normal path or they should go the not normal path. Or the path of peril even. but Ian insists on taking the freeway. And so they keep going, but at some point they eventually run out of gas. And so Barley tries to tell Ian to make the gas can bigger, and so that way they'll have more gas. Well, trying to do that spell, he accidentally makes Barley smaller instead of making the gas can larger. And so he is this tiny thing, and they have to walk to this gas station. So they walk to this gas station, and out of nowhere comes this motorcycle gang of pixies. And these pixies are rough around the edges, for sure. They are definitely not who you want to run into or have an interaction with, because they will pick a fight out of nothing. And so they pick a fight with the dad, because they have Ian and Barley have put together this top half of him that consists of just like a sweater and glasses to make it look like he's actually a person. And so they pick a fight with the dad, and basically the pixies get really mad at these things, at all these people, and so they start this big huge chase that goes on the freeway. But because Barley is small, Ian actually has to drive, and Ian is freaking out because he's never really like merged onto the freeway before. And so he's freaking out. He doesn't think he can do it, but Barley insists, like, you can do this. I know you can do this. And so this big, huge, chase happens on the freeway. The pixies are going after him and trying to stop him. And he has to go all the way across the lanes of traffic. And so he does that, and they finally get away from the pixies. But as soon as they get to where they need to go, a police car sees that they are driving crazily, and they try to pull them over. And so they pull them over, and they're freaking out. It's like, I'm not supposed to be able to drive. Like, what are we going to do? And Barley says, oh, I've got it. There's this spell that you can imitate people. As long as you don't lie, you will stay that person. You just have to tell the truth. And so they decide that they are going to imitate their stepdad, Bronco. And so they imitate him, and he is a cop as well. And so the imitated Bronco is talking to the cops and trying to do that, but there are random times when Ian lies, and so different parts of the body actually go from being the Bronco to being their parts, which is kind of funny. They finally get away, but not before Ian basically gets put in a position to where he has to basically say that his brother is kind of a no good. What's the word that they use? I can't even remember. What is it? I can't think of it. But basically saying that the brother is not good for anything, and that he is kind of a menace to society. And so that gets Barley really upset. And so they drive down and they stop at this, it almost looks like a rest area. and they're arguing, like, you think I'm a low life, you think I'm not good for anything. And they're fighting, and they're this, and then in the background, the dad is just dancing to the music that's playing on the car. And that makes them laugh, and they kind of had this genuine moment. And so they're able to get kind of just have that moment with each other. And so then they're driving on towards Ian agrees to follow the path of peril to make Barley feel better. And they run into this bottomless pit where Barley basically says, you have to cast a spell that basically, if you believe that the invisible bridge will be there, it will be there for you. And so they do that, and he's like, okay, I'm really freaking out. You have to tie this rope around me. And so they do that, and Ian's actually doing it. He's like really confident, but about halfway, the rope actually falls off, but he thinks he's still safe because Barley can catch him if he falls. But he gets all the way over and he does it. And Barley's really proud and drive the van over. But about that time, the actual Bronco comes and is like, you boys are going home. And Barley's like, yeah, he's a cop. We may need to listen to him. But Ian is actually the one that's like, no, we're going to keep doing this. We see the raven. It's pointing at something. And so they do that and they run off and they follow the raven. But it only goes to a point, and they can't use their car anymore. And Barley's like, okay, you need to do this. You need to do the thunder spell. I can't remember what it's called. And make those rocks fall so that the cops can't follow us anymore. But Ian can't do it. He tries a few times. He can't do it. And so Barley gets this idea where he is basically going to send Guinevere, sacrifice Guinevere to these rock formations. And he sends them there. And yes, exactly. And it goes towards, and it causes the rocks to fall. Guinevere is crushed. But the cops can't follow, so they begin
RIP Guinevere
for sure. And so they begin walking all the way to the Raven's Point, to where it basically leads them to this cave with some water. And so they actually enlarge a Cheeto that they had bought earlier, which I thought was kind of funny, and start going down this water thing. And so they get to the end, and they're like, okay, we got this. And so they go down this thing, but there's tons of booby traps. And then out of nowhere, which is kind of funny because Barley has been talking about this gelatinous cube this whole time, but it starts coming after them. Basically, it dissolves anything that it touches. And so they just have to pick up these shields and run down this thing. And they run as fast and as far as they can. They get into this big well where there's a whole bunch of water. And they are so close, they feel like, to getting to the Phoenix Gym. And they get out of this well, and they reach up top, and they feel like they're almost there. And they realize that they are back in their hometown. They are at their local high school. And it almost feels like all of this has been for nothing.
At the exact location that Barley got in trouble at the beginning of the movie for trying to keep people from tearing down, because he was saying it's an important monument to the history of this everything.
Right. And so they go, and Ian is just belligerent. He is so angry. He's like, I can't believe you put me on this stupid quest. We wasted our whole entire day with Dad. I'm going to go spend what time I have left with Dad, and I'm leaving you back here. And so Ian and the dad walk towards like this, it's almost like an ocean view kind of thing. And so they're out there. Barley is exploring the fountain, kind of like you said, just hoping that anything is there for him. And while Ian is at the ocean front, he starts checking off or marking off things that he was not able to do with his dad. But while he's doing that, he realizes that he did all of these things with his brother throughout that day. He was able to do all of these things. And the last one was share my life with him. And he was like, yeah, I was able to do that. And he has this realization that all of these things that he was trying to do with his dad, he was able to do with his brother. And Josh just changed his background to that exact scene. And so he was able to do all those things. And so he gets this bride, and he's gonna go apologize. But when he gets back, Barley has actually found the Phoenix Gym. But unfortunately, the Phoenix Gym has released a curse And I forgot to mention this earlier, but basically the mom met up with a manticore, and the manticore realized that there was a curse, and so they had to go on their own adventure. And they found the curse crusher and all of that stuff. I forgot to mention the mom and the manticore story as well. But they basically get there right in time as well. And so this dragon starts coming to life. It's pulling things from the high school, and it's like all the rebar and all the concrete. And the funniest thing from this movie, I think, is when the dragon's face of the, like, the mascot is the dragon's face on the actual dragon. I thought that was pretty funny. And so the dragon they're trying to fight the dragon, all the while they're trying to get the dad to actually be there so they can have time with him. And it's coming to the point to where only one of them is actually going to be able to spend time with the dad. It's just, there's not a whole lot of time left. They need to finish killing off the dragon. They have to decide. And so Barley is willing to say, no, you go spend time with dad. But Ian's like, no, I want you to do it. I've had someone to share my life with. You have these memories of dad, and I want you to have a good one, because the last one that he had was not so good. And so Barley goes and he spends this moment with the dad, all the while Ian is fighting off this dragon using all the spells that he learned throughout the movie. And that happens. And so we don't exactly get to see what happens with Barley and Wilden as they are sharing their final goodbyes. But when Barley comes back after their father disappears, he basically says that the dad said that he was proud of him, and that is really cool. And the brothers share a hug. And so we fast forward a little bit of time, and we see that the world is pretty much the same, but they are starting to use some of the magic that the movie talks about. The Bronco is actually not using his car. He's like galloping to go and do his police work. And so, yeah, that's kind of where the movie ends off. And the brothers start going on another quest at the end. Yes.
And that's the movie Onward.
It is.
Onward was directed by Dan Scanlon, and the music was composed by Michael and Jeff Dana. Dan was the director of Monsters University.
Okay.
He's also the executive producer for Soul and for Turning Red. And Michael and Jeff Dana, they're not really involved with Pixar in any other way. Been doing it a long time. They've earned a lot of awards for a lot of different movies. This is not their typical thing, but I guess they were going with more fantasy feel, so they decided to go kind of outside the box with their music. Onward currently has a Rotten Tomatoes score of 88 with an audience score of 95.
Wow, that surprised me.
One thing that it's very popular. It is one thing that's kind of like I've learned over the course of doing this. It's like there's so many types of awards that things can win that I don't know what's like. When I say that something won the best film, it can win it in a million different ways. So I don't really know at this point. I don't even know which ones are like the most like important awards anymore. I just know that this one won the People's Choice Award for Family Movie of 2021 or 2020, excuse me. It won the Dublin International Film Festival for Best Feature Film and BMI Film and TV Awards for Film Music. It also won a Saturn Award for Best Animated Film. I don't know how important those specific awards are, but it won them. It got a People's Choice, feels like that's a big one, but that's the only one that I recognized.
Gotcha.
This movie was theatrically released on March 6th.
Yes, it was.
But due to the pandemic, it was sent to Disney Plus on March 20th. You saw it in theaters, didn't you?
I did see it in theaters. So me and Carly got to watch it in theaters. Kind of funny enough, we actually went on like a special screening before it actually released. I think it did have like maybe like a week release of an actual release, but we got a pre-screening. If my backpack's closed, I don't really see it, but I actually got a button, like a pin button, with our tickets, that's of Ian and Barley, which is pretty cool.
That is really cool. very special.
Yes.
So before I get into budget, which actually now I realize that I don't have its specific numbers right in front of me, its budget and its grossing, it had a budget of 175 to 200 million. And at a box office, it made 142 million.
Yikes.
So it lost some money, but that doesn't even scratch the surface, because I got interested and I dove into a rabbit hole, because we are now in a category of movies post-pandemic or during pandemic.
Right.
Movies since the pandemic, things are different.
For sure.
This movie and all of the coming movies were all released straight to streaming, not to theaters.
Including the next one. I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah.
Turning Red is coming.
And it's interesting because they started out by saying in the trailers, like, it's going only to theaters. And then they've reversed on it. It's really interesting. So, and I don't understand 100% why. Because the last three movies before the pandemic, so Toy Story 4,
Incredibles 2,
and Coco, they grossed an average of $1.042
billion
in the box office. The last three movies since the pandemic have grossed an average of $104 million.
Yeah.
Billion versus 100, that's $900 million difference in the average gross from what they make on these movies in the box office.
Yeah.
And so I also got interested. I was like, I wonder if doing things remotely, if they've been able to find a way to make it cheaper. Kind of the last three movies before the pandemic had an average budget of $200 million. The last three movies after the pandemic had $175 million.
Gotcha.
And it's a little bit cheaper, but not really. They were all about the same.
But you...
And
you
so...
No, go ahead. I was like, you almost have to wonder, though, how much money have they made on Disney Plus subscriptions for Pixar alone. I'm sure it's not
right.
All of it.
So
I'm sure it's not even close to all of it, or even a large percentage, but it's not so negligible.
I did some digging on that to try to figure it out. And it's very interesting because I'll just read some quotes from what I was reading. So Disney doesn't divulge streaming data on individual titles. So whether or not Soul or Luca had an impact on Disney Plus remains unclear. But they put those movies straight to Disney Plus. And they asked some of the people who worked on Luca, like, Disney's sending their movies to theaters. They're sending Raya. They sent Encanto.
Yeah.
Like, they're sending their movies to theaters at least for like a month or a little bit before they put it on streaming for an additional fee. Luca didn't have an additional fee. I don't remember if Soul did.
Soul did not.
Onward didn't.
Uh-uh.
And they asked him, like, does it make you feel like your movie's worth any less because you are... because they're not getting the same kind of like respect, and they said, like, if your mind is like, I only want to do this, get my name on the big screen, like, you're making it for the wrong reasons,
right?
But it is interesting. And so Jeff Bock, a media analyst with Exhibitor Relations, said this: which movies they have, which ones Disney or Pixar, which ones go to theaters or which ones go straight to streaming, has nothing to do with quality. About making a bold play with their best chess piece. The fact that they've done it with three movies in a row leads me to believe it's really helping it with subscription numbers. So they obviously are tracking, like, when they put something out, how many people join versus how many people leave on compared to normal. And they don't tell you how much this movie is streamed versus that movie. So you can't for sure say it's because they put Turning Red into Disney Plus that they retained or gained this many subscribers. But the fact that they keep doing it, like, we're not, and it doesn't reflect in their box office. So, like, we don't really know how much this movie is actually making Disney because we can't look at its box office. So this applies to Onward. This will apply to Soul, to Luca, to Turning Red. the when we talk about the box office, what it makes, it's not going to be, it's going to be interesting because I don't know when it'll be accurate again, because that's not going to accurately show how much they're making because of this movie.
Right. It's interesting for sure. All right. Why don't we move on?
That's about all I got on it. So do you have anything else?
I don't think so. Why don't we move on to Making Our Mark?
You've got to earn your mark by doing something big for something bigger than yourself. Someday you'll all make your mark, and I can't wait to see it.
All right, Josh, what do you have for general attraction?
Zach, for general attraction, I got a 9. I was pumped for this movie because we're finally getting, we were getting out of the repeating stories they created. They went into this like whole new, brand new world, totally different, a very, very creative idea for a story. And I was so here for it.
For sure. I also gave it a 9. Like you said, it was a new story. This was Pixar's first original story since Coco. They had done Incredibles 2, they had done Toy Story 4, and then so this was the first film since Coco that was telling like a new world, like you said. And I was super excited about a new Pixar movie. The concept of the fantasy world but modernized was super intriguing. And so I was off the rails excited for this movie. For sure.
Yeah, what about plot?
Plot. I gave it a 9. I really enjoy the story of these two brothers attempting to have just one more day with their dad, and that being the driving force of everything they do, everything they learn, everything that they are doing is for this one moment more with their dad. And that story is really cool. And to see how that story and that drive not only brings them closer together, but gives them the closure on certain moments of their life as well, for Barley especially.
Yeah, I gave it a 10. I love this story from beginning to end. The way that everything goes and flows, that it really is a lot of fun. Barley is a perfectly created character to keep the movie going in a way that feels really natural. Like, there's a lot of points where it would stop and the movie wouldn't be able to go forward unless something forced it forward. If it wasn't for the fact that they made Barley this super nerdy, obsessed with this game, knows every single spell in it. And it just makes sense that he would be like, oh, we need to do this. Obviously, I know this because I'm playing the game in real life. Like, this is my most exciting moment. And that, just the way that the brothers' relationship grows and you see the, like, the anger, the frustration of siblings where there's also the inseparable camaraderie. It's really... They tell the story perfectly, and they really wrench your heart in all the ways they know how to do.
For sure, yeah, it's another one of those heart wrenching Pixar plots for sure. Themes. What do you have for themes?
Themes. I got a 9. It goes a lot with family, mostly in the way that we should remember, enjoy, and treasure the moments that we have with who we have, and so that really hits you really hard. You can feel it growing throughout the movie, and it hits you like a ton of bricks at the end.
For sure. I gave it an 8 for that, pretty much that same reason. Family is literally everything that you just see the connection that this family has, and the loss of family as well, and how you'd do almost anything for just one more moment with that loved one. And so yeah, for sure, that's definitely a good theme. Animation. I gave it a 9. What this movie does, it looks amazing. It has a style, and it certainly pulls off what they're going for. There are certain creatures, there are certain things that just look a little weird, and I almost even didn't cut it off for that, because I think that's what they were going for. But there are just some things that just are a little odd in comparison to other things. And so that's why I gave it a little bit off. Some of the creatures just look bad compared to what Ian and Barley and the centaur and the manticore, all of those things look cool, but there's some creatures that are just a little weird looking in comparison to that. And so that's why I gave it off just a little bit.
I get that. I gave it a 10 because of I leaned into that little bit of a weirdness. So if, I kind of view it kind of like monsters where they tried to make some especially different, and now they have the ability to really mess with like skin textures and they play with body shapes a lot, and the way that they move. I think that it really, I liked how they did it, and I liked the weirdness of some of them because it makes the world a little bit more crazy.
Yeah, that certainly makes sense. All right, voice acting. What would you give for voice acting?
So I wrote 10. I bumped it down to 9 because if I'm being honest, like this can't be as good as like Toy Story or Monsters, but it's so good. And dude, I love Chris Pratt and Tom Holland. They both are two actors that have like really special places in my heart. So, and it's not just because everywhere I go, I get told that I look like Tom Holland.
That's kind of funny.
Partially because everywhere I go, I get told that I look like Tom Holland.
So I gave it an 8. It sounds awesome. I think their voices fit well, but kind of like I have deducted points from like Dory. When I hear these two voices, it kind of pulls me out because I know them from their Marvel stuff. I know them from other things. And so, and especially Chris Pratt. I can only think of his Parks and Rec character when I hear his voice. They're like literally the Guardians of the Galaxy character pulls me out sometimes because I keep thinking about the Parks and Rec character. And so I gave it an 8 just because, like I said, sometimes it kind of takes me out of the movie when I hear their voices. All right. John Ratzenberger quiz.
He's another construction worker.
He is, yep. He is one of the construction workers that pulls Barley off of the fountain at both the beginning and the end of the movie.
Yeah, it was really interesting because he was a construction worker and Up, too.
Yeah, for sure, yep. All
right. Getting lazy on us with where they hide him.
All right, soundtrack. I gave it a 7. It's pretty good. Nothing really, like, super stands out. I did find myself noticing throughout the movie that like some of the sounds really fit the theme, which was pretty cool, but this isn't something that I would ever listen to outside of the movie. So
yeah, same. It's a 7. That does its job, but it's not interesting. I would never, nothing about it's recognizable either.
Yeah. All right. Characters. What do you give for characters?
I gave it a 9. I love the characters. Some of them, like, I just don't latch onto as well. And they're just kind of like, I don't care about that character at all. And so it's not like as perfect as it could be, but I really like all of the characters. Ian and Barley are some of my favorite characters in Pixar because they're just such a good brotherly duo. And they're so different, but their bond is so special. And so it's a 9 for me.
I gave it an 8. I think something you said right there is kind of how I view this movie, and it's been some I don't really know what I'm trying to say, but it's been kind of, when I first watched this movie, I didn't really connect with it as much, and it wasn't something that I like. It was not low on my list, but I think if I look back at my list, it was somewhere near the middle, and it didn't really stand out. And I think it's because of the characters, and it's not really a bad thing. I gave it an 8. But I think just these characters are not people that I really connect with. And so
they're not people. So
right. That, well, I mean, none of the characters, rarely are there characters, humans. I do enjoy Ian's path that he goes on. He grows up and becomes a more confident version of himself. And he grows to love and care for his brother and realize that, yes, while there is a gap of love that is in his life, his brother has done almost everything and anything that he can to fill that gap. And Barley being that kind of brother for Ian is really good. But like I said, there's just something that I just don't connect with these characters, and that's okay. And so that's why I gave it an 8.
I get that. So when I think about it and compare it to some of the top ones, like, you don't feel some of the, like, the this movie is one of the most fun to watch, in my opinion, like maybe the most fun watch to watch, but emotionally you don't connect to it like anything close to what you would with Inside Out or Up or Toy Story. Coco, better example than Toy Story. The way that you connect with those characters is dramatically different than you do with these. But I like this story, and I like the journey of this movie more than most.
Sure. Makes sense. All right, humor. I gave humor an 8. There's some situational humor throughout. There's pretty funny moments. Almost every scenario that they get in is worth at least a small chuckle. And so there's not really like big jokes or anything like that, but some of the things that they get into, like running away from the cops, the pixie chase scene, like just the dancing scene at the thing, there's just so many different, the dragon being the dragon face, there's just different situational humor throughout the movie that kind of make it funny throughout.
Yeah, I agree. I gave it a 9, but for the same kind of way, this movie does make me laugh at times, and it's the movie's situational humor, the way they created the world, they really built it well. But to be just like every moment, there's something that's just funny about that moment.
Yeah, for sure. All right, Easter eggs. What you got for Easter eggs?
You go first, please. What do you have?
I gave it a 7. There's not really a whole lot. I did enjoy, there's triple dent gum in the gas station is one of the things. And so the Pizza Planet is not Pizza Planet in this movie. It's Pizza Realm. I don't know if you noticed that.
I did, yeah.
Which is pretty funny. Something I read, I didn't see this, and I've not even really seen a picture, so I don't know how legit it is. But apparently, if you look close enough, you can see that one of the cooks in the Manticore's Tavern is Remy.
I thought I saw something about that, but I also didn't look very deep into it. So, I mean, I'm kind of on the same page. I didn't really feel like there was a lot. I didn't get a lot of time to look into other stuff, so I wasn't sure. I wanted you to go first to see if you had found a bunch of other stuff, so I'll go the same with a 7. It wasn't like a lot of stuff stood out, but there's,
I did like the A113. It's because it was like a police call. We have an A113 in progress. And so I did very like creative. That Easter egg. That one was pretty clever. All right, Josh, ending. What you got for an ending?
I've got a 9. I mean, it's a really good ending. The way that they kind of have him have Ian realize the way that his brother's relationship has filled a gap in his life, the way he realizes it, his brother's opportunity with his dad, the whole like kind of fight scene going on in the background is all, it's such a fun way to like finish it off.
For sure. And pretty much that same reason, I gave it an 8. It's a pretty good ending. I enjoyed the sacrifices that Ian made for Barley. The fight scene with the dragon was really cool. I like how it involved literally Ian, Barley, Mom, and the Manticore. I like how all of their stories kind of culminated in that moment. And just seeing Ian at the end use literally every spell that his brother had been trying to teach him was pretty good. It's not the best ending for a Pixar movie, but it's still pretty darn good. And so I gave it an 8.
Yeah, man. That makes perfect sense.
All right, let's tell it.
I'm doing the set that right now. I'm sorting some things.
So we ended up with Josh's score was an 88, which is pretty high for you, if I'm being honest.
It is, yeah.
I was definitely surprised by that. And I have an 81. And so that leaves us with a Lampstone score of 84.5, which is pretty good. It's a pretty good score. And so that lands it at top 10, baby.
Makes it at 10. Sorry, Cars.
And so, yeah, that lands it at 10, which is pretty cool. I think that's a good spot for it, if I'm being honest. And so, yes?
It lands higher than Incredibles on my list. I did not expect that at all. I would have told you Incredibles was my favorite movie going into this.
It's literally night podcast. Right now.
Wow. Wild. The animation of that movie really knocked it down.
Oh, that's really funny. And so that rounds up. I'm not going to do the whole list just because it's literally 20 some long, but I will tell us, I'll do the top 10. So at 10, we have Onward. 9 is Cars 3, Toy Story at 8, Monsters, Inc. at 7, Nemo at 6, Toy Story 2 at 5, Up at 4, Toy Story 3 at 3, Inside Out at 2, and Coco at 1. And so that is our top 10 currently.
That's such a good list, man.
It is. We have the list even. And so, all right, man, why don't we move on to our Woody's Roundup?
Woody's Roundup. Zach, I think you were really hitting on something when you were talking about characters. I think that is the key piece in this movie, because the characters for whatever reason are just a little bit less relatable and you connect with them a little bit less in the story than most. Because I was kind of feeling that when I was doing my Woody's Roundup, like there were no characters that I particularly hated, and a lot that I like was like I could go with least favorite character because I just don't really care about them. And like the one that I picked as my favorite, I would pick like Theodore Barley, but I can't pick either of them,
right?
So, who I mean, I picked the next, like, I picked the Manticore just because she's really fun and her development's really, it's kind of mirrors Ian's in a different way. Like, she kind of refines her own confidence and it's a fun story. I can't believe that you left out the thrift shop scene because that was,
it wasn't
my core memory, but it was one of them.
Yeah, that one was pretty funny.
One of the hardest things to do when you're doing the Making Our Mark, recapping the story, is to remember where the plot line A and plot line B, where they match up and how to tell the story of them beside each other. It's really hard. That's why Finding Nemo was so long for me.
So my favorite character is the dad. What they can do with just the torso, it shows all kinds of emotion, shows he's there for both of his sons, even just when he's literally the bottom half. And it's just really cool. And then to see the what he did before he passed for his sons, and literally dabbling in magic so that they could have a moment with him. And then him just being there for Barley and giving him this closure on that period of his life was really cool. So I chose the dad.
Nice.
Who'd you have for least favorite?
I put Officer Colt Bronco. I didn't find his cheesy humor to be funny. I didn't really care about the character. And so I just was like, of the characters, I guess it's just my least. I connect with him the least.
I chose Officer Colt Bronco.
Good choice.
He just has weird stepdad energy. And so that's really, like you said, there's nothing that really is bad about him. He's weird. And so.
Honestly, I think the writers would applaud us for doing this because I think they were trying to make him like that. I think they were trying to make him a really uncomfortable character, and they succeeded.
Right. That's so funny.
Weird stepdad energy.
All right, why don't we move on to 22?
It is an honor having you prepare 22 for Earth.
I'm going to make you wish you never died.
So, Zach, Pixar doesn't really show a lot of deaths on screen. Like, I can think of there's kind of, but not really, Up. Incredibles, I guess, has some superhero moments. Are there others that you can think of where there's like a death on screen, or like they talk about a character's death?
Hopper gets eaten by the bird.
Okay. Anything else? That one won't factor into the question I'm about to ask. Is the death of Guinevere the most noble death in Pixar history? And I think the answer is yes, unless you can think of something else. I think we have to dub that. We have to give her an award, the most noble death in Pixar history.
Guinevere. Oh, that's really funny.
I almost picked Guinevere as my favorite character. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, that would have been funny. I think that's it, man. I think that's the biggest sacrifice, the noblest steed, if you will.
Noblest steed. And then I'll flow straight into my next weird, goofy right. question that doesn't actually have an answer, which is, I don't think a pet dragon is a good pet, if I'm being honest. It's a cute little pet dragon, but how big do you think that thing's going to get?
I wonder if there's like a mini dragon.
A toy dragon?
Yeah. I mean, you got to think, like, if this were real, you know there will be breeders out there in the universe that would breed specifically small dragons so that they could live in the house. So I'm going to think he's going to stay small.
So that would make sense, I guess. We're going to say that this is kind of a specially breeded, it's a specially breeded dragon. Yes. But then I have another question for you that goes with it, which is, how long do you think this dragon's going to live? Because I don't, you know, I literally just started Googling lifespan of dragons, and all I could find was lifespan of bearded dragons, and I wanted something something super crazy that was not coming up quick enough. But what do you think, like, the average lifespan of it? Because, like, it's not weird to have pets that live a long time. Like, obviously, no. Cats and dogs are, like, a 15, 20-year, and, like, that's, like, a friend for a long time. But, like, some people get, like, parrots and tortoises. They outlive them. They are, so, like, is this like a dog, or is this like a tortoise that's going to like live on in their family for the next generation?
It obviously was a dog, like, and like it was meant to bring up the concept of a dog. I think it was meant to mirror a dog. And so I would say it was closer to a dog lifespan is what I would guess.
All right. So if this is like a bearded dragon, we're looking at like sub 10 years is their lifespan. But I found a Reddit thread that talks about the lifespan of dragons. Some of them live to be 800 years old. This thing could have been in their family for generations.
It's true. It could have. Or it could still be.
It's just a puppy. It's just a puppy, I think, in this one. For but sure. I think it's going to grow to be a full-size dragon, and it's going to be in their family for the next 800 years.
All right. I have a question for you.
Yeah, get me out of it. Stop letting me ask these weird questions.
If you could bring one of the spells into your life, which one would you bring? I'm going to take out the visitation spell, because I think that would be the one that we would all choose. If we could bring someone back for a day and spend someone that we've lost, I think that would be the one. But would you choose the lifting, basically be able to lift things wherever, the size manipulation, walking on air, or the lightning?
I think walking on air.
Okay.
Walking on air. I was debating between that and arcane lightning, just because lightning would be so cool. But I think I'd use walking on air a lot more.
Yeah.
I'm currently looking at my Christmas lights that I need to take down, and that'd be pretty sweet right now.
Right. Be much easier if that could happen.
I would have to move a ladder.
Size manipulation. You never know how handy that would be.
Great, great choice. But isn't there like a weird time limit on it?
Yeah, I guess so. But
like, if you put like a couch in the back seat of your sedan, like, you better make sure you get to your your destination on time.
All right, man. Do you have one more?
I do. In this movie, there's kind of depicted like two types of people, and you're either like a magic focused person, or you're like a technology driven person, and the whole world kind of just like decided that they didn't want to put up with the difficulty and they wanted to move on towards technology. And so I think in most areas of our life, we'd find ourselves being like the technology type person. But are there areas of your life where like you find yourself being like, I want to do things like the slightly harder way because I think it's a little bit better, or I find a little bit more enjoyment from it?
Is it, one, that's a really good question. Two, I can't really think of an answer just because that's too good of a question, I think.
I've got two examples. And I'll give you a second to think about it.
Yeah.
So the first one, I'm not like super consistent with it, but I've had fun with it a few times that I've tried. So I bought a straight razor, and like, I'm a baby face, so I don't get a lot of facial hair, but I've started like shaving with a straight razor sometimes. And like the first like week, every time I'd cut myself shaving, it looked ridiculous. But it's been like sometimes I'll go, if I'm like in a rush, I'll grab like my normal one. But I've found like it's really fun. It's very relaxing. Like it be very specific and precise and take my time with it. I also, I have a Keurig, but I typically make my coffee like at a pour over, which is takes a lot longer. Right. It's more specific, and it doesn't taste with the coffee that I buy, it doesn't taste any better, but I like the process of it and I have fun doing it every morning.
I can't really think of anything. So
that's okay if there aren't any. I mean, there might not be. That's all right.
Yeah, I think I'm the technology driven person, I guess.
There you go. Efficiency, man. You get stuff done quickly.
That's it. All right, man, why don't we move on to our core memories?
But the really important ones are over here. I don't want to get too technical, but these are called core memories.
My core memory is the scene where Ian has the invisible bridge, where he's tied with the rope, and then he gets about halfway across the rope, falls, and doesn't realize it, because it's such a foundational growth moment for him. Even though, like, right at the end, he's like, he's not glad that it happened, and he doesn't like immediately feel like the confidence. I think it's such a big step in his growth in this movie towards feeling more confident in himself. And I love the way that it played out, the way that Barley is trying so hard to help cater to him and make him feel comfortable. But then it comes to a point where it's like, there's literally nothing that I can do. He's just going to have to do it on his own. And I'm not going to tell him. I'm going to let him figure it out.
Right. That's a really good one. So mine is actually the dancing scene at the rest area.
That's awesome.
And one, it was kind of funny, but two, it really showed that the dad was able to bond the bridge between Ian and Barley. In that moment, they were fighting, they were arguing. Ian had just really kind of hurt Barley's feelings by the words that he said. And in that moment, a dance party, the dad knew that that is what the brothers needed. The dad knew that that is what, and so being able to emotionally connect. When I texted you that I cried during Onward, it was that scene. And it was weird that it was that scene, because it's kind of probably meant to be a funny scene, but it was just this moment that these three people, the dad and the two brothers, had never had before. It was a moment that the brothers had time together, but like the brothers were able to make fun of their dad for the bad dance moves, but then also join in and have that moment where for the very first time that it felt like all three of them were a family.
That's awesome.
And so I just thought that was really cool.
I love that. That's a great choice.
So, man, that is Onward.
Great movie, lots of fun. The characters are not the most relatable for some reason. I don't know why, because I love the characters, but right. It is one of the most fun movies. And I think if I were like telling somebody to like show their kids a Pixar movie, I might be at the point where I'd be like, you should show them Onward. I think that they would probably enjoy it the most.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, and so great movie, made our top 10, which is an elite company these days. So that is Onward. So we hope you enjoyed this podcast. Josh, what is next?
Up next, we've got Soul.
Dude, we have two more movies left.
Well, three. When does Turning Red come out?
March.
Okay, so like in our timeline of when we're making this, it's going to be a long gap between when we finish Luca and when we do Turning Red.
Potentially, yeah.
Zach, do you want to, we've been talking about some fun stuff. We've been talking about things behind the scenes. Do we want to make any of that public, or we want to keep that like we're just still kind of working on it?
I feel like we can make it public. I don't think we need to go into super big detail, but I think we can basically let them know the concept. How do you feel about
for
that?
It. You've got it better than I do. So tell them some of the ideas that we're going to do when we run out of movies to do.
Sure. So we are going to cover every Pixar movie as they come out. We will do Turning Red when it comes out. We will do Lightyear when it comes out. And any Pixar movies from here until forever. But obviously we are nearing the end of our Pixar run. And so we're trying to figure out what we want to do. And we decided that we want to do two different runnings of podcasts. We want to do two different things that I think will basically be good substitutes for actually what we have been doing, going through the movies and such. So we're going to do two series of podcasts. One we are going to call Not Quite Pixar. And Not Quite Pixar is going to be a look into some other awesome animated movies, or maybe less than awesome animated movies, that we're going to look at them. This podcast will look very similar to what we have been doing, but just with non-Pixar movies. And then we may even give a grade of 1 to Pixar. And see how they how close they actually get to being considered a Pixar movie. I think that could be fun. And then we also want to do something we're going to call Pixar character studies. And we want to take a character and talk about their journey. That's something that we have been talking through the character section. But I think breaking it off and actually talking about one character per podcast could be a really cool series as well. And so that's kind of what we have coming up. And I haven't even mentioned this to you, but I think as a special ending, like end of this series of podcasts going into our next season of Lamp Stomp, I want to do a Pixar character, which will definitely lead into our next series bracket, where we put
love it
literally every Pixar character on a bracket, as many as we can think of, and we go through it. It might be the longest podcast ever, but that's okay.
I'm all for that.
All right. So that's what we got coming up. We're really excited about finishing up and kind of seeing where our list is, and then moving into this next season of Lamp Stomp as well. So if you want to find us, you can find us everywhere on the internet at Lamp Stomp. And so that's what we got going on. Josh, it's been real. We are moving onward to Soul next time. So, yeah.
Love it.
For Lamp Stomp. Peace out.